How did the upcoming exhibit come to be?
It came about in part because we invited David Anfam to speak at the UW. And at the time when the contract had been signed with Denver and, you know, there were sort of the first opportunities to get into the storeroom and look at things and, you know, realize what a huge body of work there was and how much early work that people hadn't been able to see in person ever or only in bad photographs and sort of were there. And so we invited him to talk about some of the early work since it related to Washington State. And he was he's a very good speaker, and he was very generous and stayed and talked with students and so on. So we met at that point. And then when the museum opened, I went to write an article about it and also had a chance to meet with him again. And I've written a couple of things about it. And so, I don't know, I think that it just happened that we developed a sort of personal rapport. I mean, it's like one of those things, somebody you like to talk shop with, you know? So out of those, and I'm not sure then there's a mysterious cloud with sparkles on it or something.
More Conjuring.
No, then kind of out of the blue, this invitation came to curate this exhibition.
This particular one.
Yeah.
So they had it in mind, his Colville reservation years.
Right.
Yeah.
And it made sense in part because, you know, I've been teaching at the University of Washington. I have, you know, colleagues who are very knowledgeable about Native culture and Native visual culture in Eastern Washington and Washington State. That's not my field, but I've certainly served on a lot of committees that graduate students who have dealt with this kind of material. Mm-hmm. And so I think they sort of thought, well, it hasn't been done and she's up there. So, so I said, sure.
And so then how does it work? You go to the museum, you look through the holdings and you decide what's going to be in, or can you take us through that?
Well, there were several stages. I mean, there was research that needed to be done certainly Mr. Creighton, when he wrote his book on the colony, you know, advanced sort of the historical cause a great deal because it's a very good book and it really is very sound in terms of his research. But he got kind of stymied when he was trying to sort of track what Clifford Still's involvement was. And so there's certainly a mention of it in the book and so on. But so I went to Pullman. I did a lot of consulting with the Special Collections people there. And I think it's just that I knew what I was looking for, you know? It's like any archival research, mm-hmm. right? And so I did find a number of things. And actually the librarian there, Mr. O. English, found a couple of good things just because, you know, he knew the material so well. So able to fill in things, for example, in the files, which Mr. Creighton wasn't able to see for some reason, or they didn't know where to dig them up at the time. But there were the brochures for, you know, the summer sessions. And so they're graphically very interesting, you know. And so they describe who's teaching what and, you know, all the specifics and what the requirements were. And the first session was in 1937, and it was centered not just at Nespelem on the reservation, but they also had half of the session at Toppenish. I mean, now I know why. So I was able to track down, you know, some more details about what those sessions were like. And then we found the brochure for the next year. And the next year not only still taught as an on-site instructor for both those years, and he was the landscape teacher, not the oil painting and portraitist teacher. But the second year, his wife was there as a chaperone. He was really quite involved in those first two sessions. Then in the third, the colony lasted until 42, till the war, you know, kind of put an end to everything, and still was not involved in the later years of the colony. But just being able to track, you know, when he was there and kind of what the more specifics were of the colony's program and the kind of students that were there, then I could put that together with Worth Griffin's scrapbooks, and Worth Griffin being his boss and the head of the department, and really the person whose work and background was critical to starting this colony in the first place. You know, it was able to fill in some more parts of the jigsaw puzzle. Then I also, and this is something that I'm still working on and will bring out a little bit more in the talk I give there, but I'm also very interested in the rapport that Still had with the artists who were involved with the Spokane Art Center, which is the WPA art center that opened in Spokane in 1938. And the people who taught there were very distinguished people, Carl Morris and Hilda Morris, Guy Anderson. And he, you know, came over to Spokane a lot and hung out there. And there were exhibitions that went back and forth between the WPA Center in Spokane and Pullman. So there was a whole body of, you know, material coming through all the time that he had, that was right there for him to take advantage of and so on. So, you know, it's kind of a, the idea that he's out here, Mark Rothko says it, you know, he was out here producing his work out west and alone.
Well, he was. Well, he was, but to a certain extent, it's not true because he had access to all these other people.
Right. Yeah. He had a pretty good circle, and also, you know, he spent two summers in 34 and 35 at Yadu, and met very, you know, talented, a range of people, very distinguished, and he earlier on he studied in New York at the Art Students League, and he. You know, he traveled a lot and he saw a lot.
He was not a hayseed.
No.